put the candle back.
Now listen to me very carefully.
This is Attack of the 20th Century. Thank you for joining us as we explore science fiction, fantasy, and horror films of the 20th century. I'm your host, Jeff.
And I'm your other host, Kim.
Welcome to episode 17, where we review Young Frankenstein, released in 1974. Look for us on Instagram and Facebook at Attack of the 20th Century, that's 20th. We post our next movie selection there. You can comment, give your thoughts, and they just might make it on the air. Now, something that's kind of cool in our Instagram world, We have a lot more followers than the last time we reported on this.
Really?
Yeah. We are up to 907 followers.
Wow. I mean, that sounds like a very large number to me, but I have no concept of how social media works.
So yeah.
Is that a big number?
Well, I mean, not compared to like a Kardashian, I'm sure.
Oh gosh, let's not compare to that.
So I feel like we ought to do some sort of celebration for 1,000 whenever we get there, but right. I don't know what it would be. A lot of people do like a giveaway.
Oh, what are we going to give away? A kid?
Yeah.
An animal? Okay.
We have eggs.
We have eggs.
Fresh eggs.
We have farm fresh eggs. I guess you have to be local though.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll think on that.
Sorry we took last week off. We actually had to call in sick last week.
Yes, Jeff in particular. But, well, I guess both of us. You had been sick?
Yeah, I got a really nasty cold and turned into a sinus infection. And I had to get the big test and it came back negative.
Yep.
So I did not have COVID.
So we're still COVID-free in this house.
COVID-free. And then you followed that up with your second
COVID shot. Yes, my second COVID vaccination.
Moderna.
Kicked my butt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was rough.
She was down and out for at least 24 hours.
I mean, for like 24 hours. Yeah. It was like oddly, almost perfectly 24 hours that I still feel a little foggy. Honestly, that was Friday and this is, what is today?
Today's
maybe it's still affecting
Wednesday?
Me. No, I think today's Tuesday.
Today's Tuesday, yeah. Sorry.
Whatever day it is. So maybe I'm still a little foggy from that. But there was definitely a 24-hour window where it was like, it was winning.
Yeah.
And I was not.
Now, I just got my second shot as of 4 hours ago.
So we're waiting. He may tank mid-podcast. We'll see.
We'll see.
It took me, I don't know, I think I had my shot at like 9 in the morning. And then it was about 3 or 4 in the afternoon before I really was like, uh-oh, this doesn't feel good.
So something else that's happened in the last 2 weeks, and this happened actually Monday, yesterday, I started a brand new job.
Yes, you did. Congrats. So,
thank you.
Mabruk.
Thank you. That was Arabic. But yeah, it's the same company, and it's kind of a lateral move, but I'm in the IT world. And I basically went from focusing on like cell phone devices and tablets and any kind of mobile devices in a company, moving over to just IT security.
Yep.
And try to focus on that. So
it's new stuff.
It's new stuff.
That's
really
exciting.
Cool. I have many years of learning ahead of me, I'm sure. So I'm excited.
Yeah. A new challenge is always fun. I think you and I both kind of thrive on those things. So
yeah. New challenge, something kind of just fresh.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Do you have anything new that you want to report on?
Anything new? No. My life is the same.
Oh.
Oh, I think we're going camping next weekend, though, right?
Yeah.
So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, this weekend we're going camping in a new place we've never been before.
Yeah. Super, super excited about that. It's been too long. You know, camping is my happy place, so.
Yeah. It's kind of something the whole family has in common. We all enjoy going camping together.
Yeah.
So recently we've been on a Wes Anderson kick.
This is true. We have had some more screen watching time since we've kind of all been down with illness of some sort. So we tried out some Wes Anderson stuff.
Yeah. So it started with Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou several months ago. And I thought, it sticks with you. I think his films kind of stick with you.
Yeah, they do. You're right.
They just, I don't know what it is about them, but you think about them a lot. And
I don't know how you and I have gone this long and not watched Wes Anderson films. Because mm-hmm. once we saw Life Aquatic, I was like, this is very much in our vein. Like, yeah. We like this kind of quirkiness.
Yeah. And then I think we were just kind of like looking for something months ago, and it just happened to be on maybe Amazon or one of those.
I don't remember.
Where we said, hey, let's just try this out.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved it. I didn't know how much I loved it at the time because I was like, oh, that's really cool. That was funny. It's different. It's artistic.
Right.
It very different and unusual. And I like things that are different and unusual.
Uh-huh.
But then it just kept sticking with me and sticking with me. So we watched it with our two oldest, you know, like a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
We rewatched it and just loved it way more the second time, I would say.
Yeah. And I think they thought it was really fun too. Like, yeah. It was pretty funny. So.
So then we were like, well, what else? What else does this guy have? You know, and we watched The Royal Tenenbaums.
Yeah. That's so great.
Yeah. No, that was funny and it was great. And Gene Hackman, who's in Young Frankenstein, he was really great in this.
Yeah, he was. Fantastic.
So something funny about that, mm-hmm. On his performance in Royal Tenenbaums, you and I both love 30 Rock.
Yes.
And Alec Baldwin said he mimicked his performance after Gene Hackman's performance in the Royal Tenenbaums.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not know that. Well, that's fascinating.
Kind of that smart guy who's in control, but just kind
totally
of a jerk.
Alpha, you know. Male. Yeah.
Yeah. Alpha male. Like, and just his, you know, what do you call it?
Completely narcissistic.
Narcissistic. That's yes. the word I was going for.
Yes.
Then we watched with the whole family The Fantastic Mr. Fox, and I don't know how we missed that one either.
Oh, I told you, I tried to watch that. Yeah, I want to say maybe when I flew to visit my sister and brother-in-law overseas, which has been, I think, 11 years ago now, mm-hmm. I think it was playing on that flight. I don't know if the timing works out on that. Mm-hmm. I know I was going on a flight somewhere, and it mm-hmm. played on my trip there and my trip back. And I tried to watch it, and you know me, I'm in a moving vehicle, I'm going to fall asleep. So I never stayed awake through it. And now I'm kicking myself. I'm like, this is fantastic. I'm not trying to be goofy, like it's fantastic. Mr. Fox. No pun intended, but no, really, it's fantastic. I love that movie.
Oh, yeah. So for kind of our fun quiz, or just a, you know, little brainstorm. Questions with Jeff. this week, of course, we're reviewing Young Frankenstein, which is a modern movie, in quotes. You know, they fully had color filming available to them.
Yeah, it came out in 74, right?
1974. So, but they made the conscious decision to film it in black and white.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, it got me thinking, what are your top three favorite modern black and white films?
And that means, like, we have the capability to film in color, but we made the artistic choice to film in black and white.
Correct. Now, here's a few exceptions. You and I reviewed Black Sunday, which was released in 1960.
Right.
They had the ability to film in color at that time.
Oh, I don't think I realized that. Okay.
But they didn't have the budget to do so. So those I would not count either. So they're thrown out.
Okay.
So my first one is going to be, and I've mentioned it on this podcast before, that I really like the film Ed Wood. So I'll give you a little snippet about it if you're not familiar with it. This is from Wikipedia directly. It's a 1994 American biographical comedy drama film directed and produced by Tim Burton, ding, 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 starring Johnny Depp, ding, 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 as the cult filmmaker. The film concerns the period in Wood's life when he made his best-known films, as well as his relationship with actor Bela Lugosi, ding, ding, ding,
yeah,
played by Martin Landau, which he put in just an amazing, like, Oscar-winning performance.
Yeah.
And then Sarah Jessica Parker, Patricia Arquette. I mean, Sarah Jessica Parker does fine in the movie, but I don't think we're big fans.
Right.
Patricia Arquette, Jeffrey Jones, Lisa Marie, and Bill Murray are among the supporting cast. And so, one thing I love about this movie, you have all these misfits of a society, and they're all, you know, just lost as can be, but they come together to put together something that they really want to do, and it's under the charisma of Ed Wood mm-hmm. and his just desire, like brute force.
His will.
He's going to make movies, and even if he doesn't have the talent or the ability or the money, somehow, some way, he's going to make it happen with whatever he's got at his disposal.
Right.
And that kind of stuff just speaks to me.
Exactly.
And then he accomplishes it, you
know? Very self-possessed, self-starter kind of guy. So I get it. That speaks to you for sure.
But yeah, what about you? What's your first?
Okay, so actually, I'm going to, you know, I have to add a little addendum to this here. Because when you said, I'm going to ask you, you know, what are your three favorite modern black and white films? Of course, I had to do a little Googling because I'm like, I don't, off the top of my head, I can't even think of a movie that was filmed in black and white that I know is modern and not just a black and white movie.
Uh-huh.
So, of course, I pulled up, you know, the Wikipedia list, which is extensive. I was shocked. One, I was shocked. I had no idea. Like, even in 2020, the list of films that were filmed in black and white is way longer than I expected it to be.
Yeah.
So I was amazed to find it's an artistic choice that people are still making and kind of has inspired me to dig through those lists and like, hey, what do I want to watch out of this? Because I'm fascinated that people are still making that choice.
Yeah.
So what I realized also was I have not seen... a lot of these.
Yeah.
Like very, very few of them. And the ones that you had already singled out as like, these are my favorites that I've seen. Uh-huh. Well, those are pretty much the ones that I've seen. So I was like, oh, I don't have much. So I'm gonna juke you at the end of this list.
Okay.
And add in maybe a wish list.
Oh.
Because I've seen so few of these. Like now I actually have a wish list of ones that I know I want to see.
Yeah.
But I do have one that I think holds up and will hold up through the test of time. Schindler's List.
Mm-hmm.
That came out in, what, 1993? It's Spielberg. The soundtrack is John Williams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it was nominated for like 12 Academy Awards. It won, I think, 7 of those.
Yeah.
I mean, it's epic.
Right.
It's done really well. Almost like a documentary. It's historical fiction, but based on Oskar Schindler, who was a German industrialist. You know, that I'm sure everybody that's listening knows this already because it's such a huge movie. But he ends up rescuing like 1,000 Jews by employing them in his factories throughout Nazi Germany, you know, through that time period. I don't know that I could sit down and watch it now. We watched this years ago.
Yes.
And I loved it, but probably sobbed through basically the entire thing. Like, it's so gut-wrenchingly just tough to watch. But I do love that time period.
Yeah.
Pretty fascinated by World War II era and what was going on in the world then. So yeah, that ranks right up there. That, and I think it was an excellent choice to film that in black and white. Like,
oh,
it just
yeah.
made it that much more poignant.
Yeah. So my next movie I'll pick is also a American biographical drama.
I see a theme.
This one's from 2005, Good Night and Good Luck.
Yes, that's a good choice.
Directed by George Clooney and starring David Stratham, Patricia Clarkson, George Clooney, Jeff Daniels, Robert Downey Jr., Frank Langella. The film was written by Clooney and Grant Heslov and portrays the conflict between veteran radio and television journalist Edward R. Murrow and U.S. Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin, especially relating to the anti-communist senator's actions with the Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations. And so, you know, it really focuses on a time when media was supposed to just report the news and not do much commentary. And the government kind of had a stranglehold on the media to a degree. And if you put out any message out there that they disagreed with, they could just slap you with a blacklist, which we've talked about, you know, Woody Allen, The Front.
Mm-hmm.
There's other movies out there that really jump into this more.
Yeah.
But it's just exciting to think of somebody that's going out on a limb and fighting the U.S. government, if somebody as imposing and powerful, you know, as Joseph McCarthy.
Yeah.
It's just very, really inspiring movie, powerful movie.
Mm-hmm. I think it's so relatable to, you know, the 2020s too. Like where I think there's a lot that you can tie back. Cancel culture, you can look back and see a lot of tie-ins with McCarthyism and that whole era. That era is fascinating. I just love history in general, but that era is also very fascinating. So that's actually my number two pick also, because like I said, I've seen very few of these modern black and white movies. And I did really like Good Night and Good Luck and just it has such gravity to it, you know, which I guess Schindler's List does too. So that maybe that's my thing. If you're going to make a black and white movie, maybe I need it to have this, you know, gravitas to it that just, I don't know. Or I don't, I'm not saying it needs to have that, but I definitely enjoy that. I like, yeah. I love both of those movies.
Yeah. For it to be memorable and etched in your mind so mm-hmm. many years later, because this movie came out in 2005. I think we watched it maybe a year or two after it got released, you know, just to be like still talking about it now in 2021. Mm-hmm. But for my third pick, I will go with Woody Allen's Love Letter to New York, Manhattan.
Oh yeah.
So this comes from Wikipedia. It's a 1979 American romantic comedy film directed by Woody Allen. Allen co-stars as a twice-divorced 42-year-old comedy writer who dates a 17-year-old girl, Mariel Hemingway, but falls in love with his best friend, Michael Murphy's mistress, Diane Keaton.
Yep.
And Meryl Streep and Anne Byrne also star.
That's a list of actresses right there.
Yeah, it is. You know, Woody Allen, here's the thing. A lot of people just don't like Woody Allen because of his personal life and
right.
the history there. And then also, his movies are not mainstream.
Nope.
Typically, the comedy is not, you know, standard comedy.
It's not slapstick.
There's a little bit of slapstick, but it's mostly cerebral.
Yeah, exactly. It's very cerebral.
You know, a lot of times he's debating philosophy. So he'll have characters throughout his movies that'll give two or three different sides to some sort of big, heavy issue.
Mm-hmm.
Or they'll throw out references to old Russian literature.
Yeah.
Or,
oh, yeah. I think he loves Russian lit,
yes.
actually.
Or Ingmar Bergman films. Or they'll throw out these things as if you should know what the heck he's talking about.
Yeah, I love that.
Me too. But it's not for everybody.
No, it's not. But like you said, it's very cerebral. And I do think, I wonder... I would love to know how he fancies himself. Does he see himself as a modern day philosopher? Because I do think his movies are asking, oh, I bit my cheek right there. Ouch.
Medic.
I'm okay. It's just a podcasting injury.
Man down.
Where was I going? He asks really big questions. I don't always like the answers he portrays.
Yeah.
Obviously, he and I do not share a worldview.
Right, right.
But I like that he feels comfortable using his art to ask big questions.
Mm-hmm.
It does feel very philosophical, most of his movies.
Yes.
Some of them are a little bawdier, raunchier, just goofy.
Right.
But for the most part, there is a deeper question being asked.
Mm-hmm.
And a very, you know... I don't want to say existential look at life, but mm-hmm. there's something going on there that's beyond surface level.
Yeah.
And that's what I can appreciate about Woody.
Yeah. 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 I appreciate the intelligence and I appreciate the conversation.
Exactly.
Because these are conversations and I always envy the characters in the film, you know, because even though, like you said, his worldview is probably more of an atheistic, you know, just a
secular, yeah.
Yeah, just a different worldview than you, for instance. But these conversations, I would love to have these kind of conversations where people kind of dig into the meaning of life.
Right. Yeah, I think where he excels is at looking at the motivations behind people's choices. So there's really, you know, like he's asking these questions without asking these questions. And if you're into it, like if you can get into what's happening in his movies, it's all there, you know, like you're really like microscopically kind of peeking into other people's lives, but lives, normal lives. And like, why are we wired this way? Why do we make the decisions we make? And it's a big worldview question, really. And I like digging into that. So
right. What's your third modern black and white film?
Okay, so my third is kind of a cop out because I don't remember a ton about this except for like, this is too sad to be a cartoon.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to give you a wish list because, you know, like I said, as I dug into this and realized, wow, I have not watched many of these.
Yeah.
It started a wish list of things that I do want to watch. So my third one is Frankenweenie.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it's animated, but it is a black and white animation. So that counts, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And we love, that's what's his face?
Tim Burton.
Thank you. That's Tim Burton, who we do love his look, his lens.
Yeah.
But it was a bit sad.
Yeah,
You know, so that's, well, it's a pet.
Just in the very beginning.
Yeah, that's true. In the very beginning.
And then it picks up. Yeah.
But things didn't work out fantastic towards the end either, did they?
I really don't even remember the end.
I know. I'm struggling to remember it well also. So Frankenweenie's my pick just because it's one I have actually seen. And then I'm going to throw out my little wish list. I have three at the top of my wish list right now.
Okay. Well, go for it.
Okay.
You start.
So two of them kind of tie in together, but I'm going to start with the first one because it doesn't tie in with the other two. The Artist came out in 2011, and it's basically like a young actress. It's set to be in like the 20s going into the 30s, I believe, and a young actress kind of falling for an aging silent film star, but he's kind of aging out of like his, the talkies are becoming a thing, right? So it's historical. I've heard great things about it. I think it won a lot of acclaim, maybe even awards.
Okay.
And I just forgot about it. Like somehow, I was busy having a baby in 2011, so maybe that's how I missed this.
Right. And if you're busy, I'm busy usually.
Yeah, exactly. Third baby at that point, so yeah. So anyhow, I would love to go back and watch that one because I did miss out on that. And I have heard great things about the storytelling in that.
Okay.
And the artistry. Okay, so I don't know a ton about this film other than it's black and white. It was written and directed by Kenneth Branagh. And this is like the first director, you know, film that he has written and directed and didn't star in himself. But he wrote most of the roles pretty specifically for specific actors. And Kenneth Branagh is really good at doing that.
Oh, yeah.
And I love him. My absolute favorite Shakespeare adaptation is his Much Ado About Nothing. And so... this is supposed to be a romantic comedy. You know, it's Kenneth Branagh. It's British. It kind of ticks a lot of boxes for me. So I definitely want to watch that one and see what that's about. And then to tie into the whole Shakespearean thing, I guess in 2012, Joss Whedon, of all people, reproduced Much Ado About Nothing.
Yes.
As a black and white retelling of Much Ado About Nothing. So that is my absolute favorite Shakespeare comedy. I love the Kenneth Branagh, Emma Thompson version of it. So I would like to see this 2012 black and white adaptation.
Ooh.
See how it holds up.
Now, I think Henry Cavill had to come do reshoots, but he had a mustache in it. And so they had to digitally blot out his mustache.
Are you serious?
No, no.
What?
That's Justice League.
I know. I was like, was he filming this while he was filming Justice League? No. What the heck? Don't mess with me like that.
No, I'm sorry. Well, I'll throw out one that I also, when I was looking through, you know, options, I said, man, I still need to see R. Pat's in The Lighthouse.
Oh, yeah. That's true. That's another one we haven't seen.
And then just one other I'll throw out there. I am one. It's kind of funny because I've grew up a boxing fan and I'm a Robert De Niro fan. I have never seen Raging Bull.
Oh, nor have I. Well, maybe I saw it with my dad growing up. But I don't remember it. All right, before we talk about 1974's Young Frankenstein, remember that there's going to be spoilers. So if you haven't seen it, hit pause, go watch it, come back and join us in a bit. All right, so I'm going to start with a Rotten Tomatoes score because you don't see this often.
Okay.
Young Frankenstein gets a 94% critic score and a 92% viewer score on Rotten Tomatoes. So...
Everyone loves it.
Impressive.
Yeah.
It is well loved. It is a well loved movie.
Sure.
All right. So the basic synopsis is that a young Frankenstein, he's a
descendant.
Yeah. Descendant of the original Dr. Frankenstein, played by Gene Wilder. He finds out he has inherited his infamous grandfather's estate in Transylvania. So he's going to go to the castle, find out what he's inherited. He soon begins to recreate his grandfather's experiments. Now, I will note at the very beginning of the movie, he's in a lab lecturing other medical or science students of some sort. And he is very adamant that he is to be called Dr. Frankenstein and not Frankenstein because he does not want to be connected with his grandfather's crazy antics from the past. But soon after he inherits the castle, gets there, starts hearing strange music, weird things are happening, finds hidden libraries, hidden passages. He realizes actually his grandfather did some really interesting work and he's going to do it too. He's going to try and bring an inanimate dead person back to life.
Yeah. He goes all in.
He goes all in and the movie takes off from there.
Yeah. Yeah, fantastic. So I first saw this movie, I tracked it down to about 1988.
Okay, that's pretty specific.
Which would put me at 11 years old. So my grandfather, who was really dying at the time, and he passed away a couple years later, he did a surprise visit with our family, came down to Florida from West Virginia, and spent a couple weeks with our family, and one of the movies that we sat and watched together was Young Frankenstein.
Oh, fun.
The memory is bittersweet, you know, because he laughed and laughed this entire movie and just cackled. But because of his health, sometimes when he would get to laughing, he would have a pretty terrible cough fit.
Aww.
And then, but just picked right back up and started laughing again.
It was worth it for him, huh?
It was worth it. And it was a great moment of joy just spending time with him. And you and I have talked about it before as far as, you know, your identification with a movie and then your feelings that you have for it are often tied with, you know, who you watched it with, what was happening at the time in your life.
The nostalgia, yeah.
And so for me, you know, I will always love this movie because of that,
for sure,
that familial connection there. But you and I hadn't watched this together in probably 20 years, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure my first viewing of this was early on. You and I were dating or early married. But I didn't have a lot of memory. I knew it was a Gene Wilder, and I do love Gene Wilder. But yeah. So are you going to tell on me that we went to watch it, what, a week ago, and I fell asleep?
Yeah. I wasn't going to say it. And we did have to, I got to watch it twice in a week's time.
He didn't have to watch it with me the second time, but he wanted a refresher. So. Yeah. And he loves it. So yeah, so I don't know. It was the end of a long day. It was late. And I did fall asleep. Not through the whole thing. Like, I was awake for some funny stuff. But yeah, so watched it again just, you know, a day or so ago.
Yeah. And this was post-COVID shot too. So you were still kind of weak.
Yeah, oh,
and
that's right. We did watch it the night after my, That's why I was sleeping.
Yeah.
Yes. So anyhow, you're rolling your eyes at me. I saw that.
So you've seen it a couple, three
times. I've seen it a couple times now. Yes. Okay. Yes. And it ranks right up there with all of Gene Wilder's other works.
So. Oh, yeah. Yeah. And I don't know if you're a big Mel Brooks fan, and maybe we could have done another list for fun, you know, your top Mel Brooks movies and that kind of thing. Maybe we'll save that for a future podcast. This is really, to me, Mel Brooks at his best.
Yeah.
You know, this is a movie that his comedy works really well in this context. What's really cool about this movie, it started, and we watched an interview with Gene Wilder where he was watching, and he was a big fan of these old Frankenstein movies from Universal.
Right.
And he was watching one of the old Frankenstein films, and he said to himself, what if it ended on a happy note instead of a negative note?
Yeah.
And so he wrote down a two-page story idea, and he wrote at the top, Young Frankenstein. And then I thought this was pretty funny. His agent called him like the next day and said, look, I don't know what we're going to do next, but what I want to do is pair you with Marty Feldman and Peter Boyle in your next movie. And he's like, okay, well, you know, Gene Wilder's like, why? Why? You know, that's fine, but why? And he says, well, I just started representing Marty Feldman and Peter Boyle.
He's like, it's a 3-for-1 deal. I want all you people in the same movie.
Yes. I thought, oh, that's great. You know, so Gene Wilder went back and wrote down the whole scene with Igor at the train station. And they started passing that out to executives. And so just to piggyback off that, originally they took it to Columbia Pictures and, you know, they were strong arming him into saying, hey, let's do this in color. You know, this is 1974. Right. Black and white, you know, is going to scare people away.
Yeah.
And so he ended up pulling it out from them and gave it to 20th Century Fox, their big supporter, which I thought was cool, Alan Ladd Jr. And you're like, well, who's Alan Ladd Jr.?
Exactly. Who was that?
He was the big supporter of George Lucas to make Star Wars.
Oh, okay.
Because at the time, you remember the 70s were kind of a bleak period and people weren't taking chances on science fiction films.
That's right.
And, you know, George Lucas had a big supporter. And, you know, everybody, this just shows, goes to show that nobody is really all that successful without some help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so this isn't going to be a Star Wars lesson, but let's just say Alan Ladd Jr. was George Lucas's suit that was helping him and making sure he got the money, he got the time, he got the resources he needed to make that classic. Sure. And he very much, and he doesn't get much credit for this, but he did the very same thing for Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks.
Interesting. Okay.
For Young Frankenstein. And just on a side note, I don't have the numbers in front of me. We could look them up real quick. But the movie was made for, like, I want to say a couple million dollars and returned like $70 million. I mean, you can look it up if you want. But it was a huge...
I'll see if I can pull that up.
It was a huge payday for everybody, a major smash success. So very cool. Something else I'll throw out there is just kind of trivia knowledge. So Aerosmith took a break from a long night of recording to go see this film in 1974.
Really?
And Steven Tyler wrote the band's hit Walk This Way the very next morning after the movie. And you know which scene I'm talking about with Marty Feldman, and he's like, walk this way. You know, hands him the cane, and... You know, and Gene Wilder starts hunching over, walking like him, and he kind of catches what he's doing. Is like, all right, what's going on? But that was pretty hilarious, and
that
led to
is
the
so funny. I had what a hit. Coincidence. Yeah. All right, so it looks like the budget for Young Frankenstein was $2.78 million, and the film grossed $86.2 million at the box office.
Yeah.
So that's
big,
pretty
hit.
Sweet. Yeah.
What's weird too is there was no Young Frankenstein 2. There really wasn't anything kind of like it that came after either.
No.
It's kind of odd, isn't it?
It's a standalone thing.
Yeah. Usually, if that were to happen today, somebody makes a smash hit.
Right. You got a sequel.
We got a sequel.
Queued up. Like, the second your opening weekend numbers come in, they're like, we're doing the sequel for that.
Yeah. You'd have Young Dracula, and you'd have Young right. Swamp Thing.
Or exactly. Yeah, exactly. A series or a sequel or something.
This is just trivia I'll just throw out there. Sure. I thought it was interesting. Because we learned this from just some YouTube interviews we were watching.
Mm-hmm.
But the aesthetic of this looks so awesome. You know, the laboratory with all the buzzy instruments and the lighting.
Oh, yes.
All that was just amazing looking. And come to find out, they had discovered, his name was Ken Strickfaden. I'm sure I butchered the name. He had done all of that elaborate electrical machinery for the original Universal films. And he was able to get that same equipment that was in the original Universal.
So it was basically the same set.
And so that was just cool.
Like, that is cool. That's cool.
And they look great.
I think Gene Wilder has like a long love for these stories, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think we saw that in an interview. He, you know, they terrified him as a kid, but you know, that kind of builds that fascination. Like, those of us that grew up with Jaws, we all kind of have this fascination with sharks, right?
Yeah.
You know, and so this was kind of like not Gene Wilder's love story to Frankenstein, but or love letter to Frankenstein, but it was kind of like his like homage to the Frankenstein story with a Gene Wilder, Mel Brooks twist.
Yeah.
Comedic twist to it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, because he rattled off like five different Frankenstein movies in a row.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, maybe not so much, you know, the Son of Frankenstein, but, you know, but like it was clear that he knew them. He knew them in order.
The whole franchise. Yeah.
And he had, fond memories of it. And so why don't we go ahead and start our high fives?
Okay.
My first high five is going to go with just the artistic choice to mimic the original Universal films. Frankenstein and The Bride of Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And Wilder said this one has more in common with The Bride of Frankenstein than any of the other Frankenstein movies, but there's obviously major components of Frankenstein in this. But
right.
And I sent you a scene earlier,
mm-hmm.
The blind man scene from The Bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
And it's very similar to what they had with Gene Hackman in this movie. Obviously, you know, absent is the comedy.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, there's a little more religious references in the older one.
The original, right.
And even just like the throwback with the monster and the little girl.
Yeah.
You know, because that's such a memorable part of the first movie.
Yeah. Such a tragically memorable part of the first movie.
So when you see the monster with the little girl, you're like, oh, crap.
Right. You're like, Peter Boyle, don't do it.
Right. But, you know, you think of like comedy and then these old Universal films. It's just such a bold choice to say, we're going to mimic the look and the aesthetic and the vibe of that, but then we're going to throw in some of our own comedy.
Yeah.
A lot of it slapstick and silly. Marry those two together. I mean,
yeah, it could have been a hot mess, but it wasn't. It makes me think of the, what's the movie we reviewed from the 80s? The kids and the Monster Squad.
Yeah.
They did the same thing that Gene Wilder and Mel Brooks did that scene with the little girl and the Frankenstein monster.
Like, yeah, that's right.
They took it kind of a comedic sweet turn. And I'm sure they were influenced. I'm sure they must have seen Gene Wilder's take on Frankenstein. So it influenced an 80s movie too.
Okay. But yeah, I just high five for just the boldness and the artistic choice. You know, I think you can be artistic and comedic at the same time. And
sure, this absolutely. Movie proves it. Well, I'd say another high five for sure. It's just Gene Wilder himself. Obviously, you and I are huge fans of Gene Wilder. I grew up watching Willy Wonka like over and over and over. Mm-hmm. Like, we still watch it now as adults. We just love that movie.
Yeah.
No, you know, we love Johnny Depp too, but his...
No comparison.
Yeah, there's no comparison. His Willy Wonka is not Gene Wilder. He just has just this crazy ability to throw himself into a character.
Mm-hmm.
It's so great. So I think you had mentioned his speech to Inga and Igor before he goes to confront the monster. He's really serious, but he's calm and he's reassuring. He knows what he's doing. Like, he's like, whatever you do, don't open this door. I don't care what I say. You ignore me. Don't open. And the second the monster starts grunting and growling.
He goes right up and quietly, he's like, get me out of here. Let me out.
It was a joke. You don't understand a joke? I was joking. Oh, he just can turn on a dime like that, and it's so good. He's so believable from both perspectives. He's just great. He's so intense. Like, sometimes you're just like, oh, like, I feel like myself backing into my chair because he's like going to come out of the screen at me.
Yes.
You know, he gets so intense. But that just makes his characters what they are, really. Yeah. And I, you know, like the intensity of his Dr. Frankenstein, and then I think of, like, you know, when you see him as Willy Wonka, or even as he's the washed up sharpshooter in
Blazing Saddles.
Yeah. Then he goes into this complete deadpan, serious, like, you never know. It takes you a minute to figure out, like, is he joking right now?
Right.
Is he being serious? Like, what's happening here? You know,
right.
But it's just genius. It's really genius the way he can just switch it on and off like that.
Yeah. Well, he goes, like we said, all in earlier. We're using that phrase again. He goes all in, like when he's like, yes, he's alive, you know, whatever. He goes
it's all like 110%.
In.
Yeah.
And there's no nod to the camera, no wink, no nothing.
No.
It's like he is a mad genius at that moment.
Fully committed.
No, I love him. I mean, this is like probably his widest range of acting, you know?
Yeah, he's kind of all over the map in this.
Yeah.
Even, you know, he seems so, in the opening scene when he's lecturing this class of students, like, he's so intelligent and that, you know, just super intelligent, calm professor type. And then yet, you know, this guy calls him Dr. Frankenstein and he's like, you know, snaps basically. Like, he's right on the edge. You can tell he's about to like lose it. Like, don't, it's Frankenstein, you know, when he still doesn't want to be associated with his ancestors.
Right.
But yeah. And then the poor old guy that he's using as a lab example in class just
great
tortures
scene.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. So that actor too, just for those of you who don't know us, we love this film called What's Up, Doc?
That's right.
And that same actor, he plays the judge in that. He also plays a minister in Blazing Saddles.
Yes, yes. Must have been a big Mel Brooks.
Yeah.
I don't know, he was one of Mel Brooks' buddies or something.
But, yeah.
Yeah.
But that's a great scene. I'll throw out Marty Feldman. High five for him as Igor. All the slapstick comedy that he brings to this is just fantastic. You know, something that he does in the movie is switch which side his big hump is on.
Yeah, yes, he's a hunchback.
He's a hunchback, and he does this as a gag to the, you know, like the cameraman,
yeah,
to the maker.
Is that what we call breaking the fourth wall? Like, he's making eye contact with the audience.
Oh yeah, he does,
like,
that. Like, he'll
we're in on his jokes.
He'll say "broop" and point to his back.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
He had a hunch, I think is what he says.
He's like, I don't know, I had a hunch. And he makes his own drum roll.
But no, like I was going to say, he switches which side the hump is on. He did that and didn't tell the filmmakers until they pick up on it. And so then they added in a joke about it to kind of explain it.
Right.
But it just, oh my gosh, just so different. Just a weird performance, odd, but so funny.
This cast is just full of those characters, though, honestly. Yeah. Like, I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall for the filming of this. Because, yeah. I mean, you got Cloris Leachman, Marty Feldman, Gene Wilder, Madeline Kahn, Terry Gar- like, these guys are just...
Yeah, comedic giants.
How did they get a movie filmed? Because they're all, I mean, are these people, I mean, they're professionals, obviously, but if I had the ability to be that funny, like, you probably just couldn't shut me up.
You're right.
Like, I would just be obnoxious all day long. And maybe I am obnoxious all day long, I'm just not that funny. Yeah. But
well, from everything I've seen, they had a hard time keeping straight faces in this movie. They had to do several takes because people just kept laughing. They were cracking each other up.
Yeah.
It couldn't,
how could you not? What a cast. What a cast.
But, you know, the funniest scene that our kids just laughed and laughed with us because we watched this with them.
Yes.
You know, where the doctor and Inga are going through and they have like the head that's like a year old and the 6 month old
dead in the head. Lab.
Yep. And then it comes to Marty Feldman who's like, ah! He starts singing. What a great, I mean, we were all in stitches in that scene. Another high five I'll throw out is to Kenneth Mars as Inspector Kemp.
Oh, yeah.
He's another one that was in the movie. What's Up, Doc?
Can we just plug What's Up? If you have never seen What's Up, Doc with Barbara Streisand and what's his name?
Ryan O'Neal.
Yes. Go do yourself a favor. It's a great movie. I won't say anything more about it. But yes, that's where we know Kenneth Mars from because we love What's Up, Doc.
Yeah. Well, he steals every scene he's in. He's got these real quirky mechanical movements because something's up with his arm. He's got
like a fake arm. I know he's a military guy, so I'm assuming he lost his arm in some war or something, right? So he's got this like, it's mechanical. It almost seems wooden. It must be wooden because at one point he loses it and he's like, off to the lumberyard, you know?
Yeah.
But it's almost like he's a toy soldier. I don't know. I immediately go to Nutcracker because our daughter has been in Nutcracker for every year of her life, it feels like.
Uh-huh.
And the way the toy soldiers move in the performance of the Nutcracker, like all of his movements, like, but even the way he walks, it's just his arm that's fake. It's not his whole body.
Yeah.
But his whole body moves like a toy soldier. Like,
yeah.
And for the audience, I'm sitting here making my little
making the motions.
movements that nobody can see. But
in any scene he's in, he'll take like 20 seconds just to move his arm in the right position.
Yeah.
You know, so it's very much part of his scene. And that's why I say he steals the scene.
Really? Yeah.
Because he takes so much time to do anything
it's
with
like
that arm.
The whole movie is waiting on him to like do 48 motions to light a cigarette. You know? Right. Or a cigar, whatever.
And his unintelligible speeches are great, you know.
Oh, yeah. His, like, nondescript, I don't know, Central European accent, sort of, whatever it is. It's almost like the Swedish Chef and something.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't even... He's unintelligible half of the time.
It's definitely not German, whatever he's doing.
No, but. No. But I think it's the same accent he uses in What's Up, Doc.
Probably.
He's, like, I don't know, vaguely European in What's Up, Doc, too. But, oh my gosh, hysterical.
And the audience, when he'll do a speech, they'll be like, huh?
Yeah, the whole room will go, what?
And then he'll say, like, in, like, plain English.
Right.
It's like, why didn't he do that the first time? But that's part of his comedy. It's just hilarious.
Yeah, he's great.
Who else will you give a high five to?
Oh, what about Terry Garr? We got to talk about Terry Garr. Well, let's hit both the ladies in there. Terry Garr and Madeline Kahn are two phenomenal... Oh, and Cloris Leachman. I can't leave out. The three women in this movie are phenomenal.
Yeah.
We see the most of Terry Garr. We see the least of Cloris Leachman and Madeline Kahn. But still, every time they're on screen, they're nailing it. They're just so great. I love that Terry Garr, you can't call her the dumb blonde in the movie, which I know is probably a very passe thing to say. Anyhow, but she does have this like silly innocence. She's not completely inept. She's not like Amelia Bedelia, you know, where she's just always getting things wrong. But she is, there's a naivete to her that's sweet and unassuming and a little silly, right?
Like, come try rolling in the hay. Yeah. She's just literally just rolling back and forth in the hay.
Yeah, and she makes these comments that come across as, obviously there's some, you know, more adult humor, a little bit body humor in here. You know, so she makes these... adult sounding comments, and then there's like this silly, naive twist on it. Like, yeah. She's like, would you like a roll in the hay? And, you know, Gene Wilder's got this look on his face like, whoa, where's this going? And then she's like literally like a kid rolling in the hay.
Yeah.
Like, whoa.
There's like a sweetness and a naivety to her, like you said, and
right.
But she's beautiful, you know. So yeah. It's obviously capturing
his
attention.
Still sharp as a tack. Like she's very aware of everything that's going on. It's not like she's just a blundering idiot at all. She's no Gomer Pyle in this, you know. So she just nails that mix. It's really nice.
That and whole scene where they're like. Well, like we said earlier, put the candle back.
It's like a hidden, bookcase that turns and opens.
Yeah,
a
hidden passageway.
Yeah.
The comedy between those two in that scene, and that scene's probably like 4 minutes long or something, but it's so hilarious. Like they just have a chemistry about them, but this big part is her.
Yeah, it's huge. She really, such a perfect foil for Gene Wilder, I think. Just really... really good. And, you know, Madeline Kahn and Gene Wilder are no stranger to working together either. Yeah. They were together in Blazing Saddles, which, you know, we've probably mentioned that before on here because we do like, it's not a PC movie, guys. And
no.
It's not okay by any 2021 standards.
No. It really wasn't okay in 74 either.
No, but that was kind of the point. That was the point of the comedy. But yeah, Madeline Kahn and Gene Wilder do excellently together. Well,
Madeline Kahn, when we talked about this a little bit earlier, but Madeline Kahn, if you're given this character and you're supposed to play this kind of a stuck-up, you know, very...
She's prudish.
Prudish, yeah. And, you know, flirty.
You can
She's
look, but you can't touch.
Yeah, very much so. And she has lots of money. She comes from wealth.
You're right.
And snobby, you know. She definitely does not want to be at this castle. No. Or anything. But like to play that role, any other actress that you think of that's playing it, you would probably hate their guts just because of the characterization, their backstory.
Kind of the poshness of their attitude.
Yeah.
Right.
So the common man watching this probably would be like, you know, we all collectively as an audience hate this woman.
Right.
But Madeline Kahn is just so odd and quirky. And
you
like,
cannot hate Madeline Kahn.
No, her spin on it is just funny. And it's just, she's silly. And you don't hate her. You know, you're watching it and you're like, okay, she's absurd
and
ridiculous.
She's absurd. Yeah, I mean, that's her character. Again, we're back to What's Up, Doc. But Madeline Kahn is in What's Up, Doc
also.
She is. And she is the villain, essentially. Almost the villain. No, I guess, you know, the guy, Kenneth, whatever his name is.
He's kind of a villain, too.
He's the villain, too. But she is the person that you'd want to hate because she's so... terribly matched with Ryan O'Neal's character, and you cannot hate her.
No.
She's hysterical. That is Madeline Kahn. Like, she will not let you hate her because she's so good at her craft and so funny.
So, low points, and most of these are really just comments. There's some of the comedy that is sort of like Saturday Night Live. Now, admittedly, I haven't watched Saturday Night Live in years.
Yeah, that's true.
But a big part of SNL humor is something's funny because they say it's funny.
That's true.
And they do something, and like, I'll give you an example. I have a different grandfather, and we watched a skit with Bill Murray where he's doing an interview on a television show, and every question they ask him, his response is, "That's true. You're absolutely right." And he says it like 12 times in a row. And in the end of it, it's like his book that you can buy is called "That's True. You're Absolutely Right."
Right.
And it's funny because we are doing it over and over again, and we say it's funny. And it's Bill Murray, the delivery.
Right.
So there's just a few skits like that in there. Like just every time they say Frau Blücher,
Cloris Leachman's character.
Her characters. These horses whinny.
Yeah, they whinny and rear up, and something about her frightens the horses every time.
So
it's not funny, but it's funny.
It's funny. They do it like 4 or 5 times, and just the reactions to it is funny.
Right.
But, you know, like that, it's just a taste thing. Like, if it's sort of that SNL flavor of comedy.
Yeah, like a skit.
It's like a skit.
Yeah.
So, really, I didn't have any low points other than what I just mentioned, but I woke up this morning, and I thought about this scene in particular with the Frankenstein's monster, and he's kidnapped...
Madeline
Kahn's character, and basically forces himself on her in a non-consensual way.
But it's played up all very comedic.
Yeah,
right?
It's played for laughs.
Right.
And then she starts singing during the scene. So obviously she's into it. And so much that later on in the film, they're married.
Right. And she's now, you know.
She's now the bride of Frankenstein.
Yeah. And we're led to believe she's a bit of a tiger.
Yeah. And so, I don't know. It's kind of a dated mindset. It's a dated idea that, like, right. you know, what this woman needs is really just a firm man, you know.
Yeah.
Just to grab her and treat her a certain way, and then she'll come around. And,
yeah.
you know, it's just like, oh, I have a daughter. You know, I don't like to think about that ever happening.
No, and, no. Well, and that's really, that's a pretty, if you peel back the layers there, it's a pretty misogynistic view, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
this, it's not okay to be this prudish woman, and what's going to fix you is for this man to basically have his way with you.
Yeah.
And then now you're just free, and,
yeah.
and you want all these things that you didn't want before.
Yeah.
Like, that's...
Yeah.
That's a tough, that doesn't really, you know, doesn't stand
the test of time. It's not 2021, right?
It's yeah. not 2021. And yes, you're right. We're parents that are raising a daughter and sons that
mm-hmm.
we also don't want to think this is an
no.
okay scenario. So.
No, not at all. And so that just what, for some reason, I woke up thinking about that scene. It's like, we're going to talk about this movie. That scene, you know, you grow up with something, you become desensitized to it.
Right, right.
And, you know, and I was just like, I woke up and I thought, if I could take something out of this movie, it would be that. I mean, yeah. they could have done something else for him to win her over other than sure. force himself on her.
Right.
Anybody else from the movie you want to bring up? We pretty much, I mean, obviously we love this cast. We love this movie. We didn't talk too much about Peter Boyle as the monster, but he does a great job. Everybody knows him from
yeah.
Everybody Loves Raymond.
Yeah, he's the dad. He's Raymond's dad.
He's
Raymond's
Everybody
dad. Loves Raymond. Exactly. Which his face is comedic to me anyhow, and I don't mean that as a slander against him. Like, he has great facial expressions, even as I think he's passed on now.
Mm-hmm.
But even just as the dad in Everybody Loves Raymond, like, he can mm-hmm. make a face that just, you know, cracks up the room. Like,
oh, yeah.
he's always had that kind of grumpy old man vibe going.
Oh yeah.
You know, so he legitimately has what, maybe 3 lines in the whole movie, because he can't talk. Well, he's dead.
Right.
They bring him back to life and he doesn't have the ability to talk. He just does a lot of grunting and growling.
Right. And strangling.
Strangling of people. Yeah. And then finally, you know, I don't really know what happens there where Dr. Frankenstein shares his brain matter with him or something.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
now he has the ability to speak. So he has a few lines at the end
mm-hmm.
where we see now that he's an intelligent human being.
Yeah.
But still his acting is fantastic. Like, he just conveys so much with his face and his
mm-hmm.
just kind of side, his shiftiness of his eyes.
Yeah.
You know, like he's a menacing guy just from size anyhow. Like,
mm-hmm.
so it works well for this, for to be Frankenstein's monster. You need a large person.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so he's a big guy.
And he doesn't do a bad job tap dancing either.
No. That's it. Yeah. Well, so I guess it was really him tap dancing,
yeah, it
right?
Was. He was in a comedy with Michael Keaton back in the day called The Dream Team. It was another 80s movie.
I don't think I ever saw that.
It was funny. I saw that one in the theater.
You know, Gene Hackman even has a little cameo here.
Oh, yeah.
And
I'm glad we said that.
Yeah. He's always, you know, serious actor. And then boom, he's in the middle of this comedy romp. And he's great. Like, we only see a you know, a few minutes of him. And
yeah.
it's, you already referenced this scene.
Mm-hmm.
There's a blind man scene in the original. That's from Bride of Frankenstein, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they basically recreate that whole scene in
mm-hmm.
this movie. But Gene Hackman plays the blind. I don't know. He's like a monk or a priest or something. Lives on his own.
Yeah.
You know, he's just so happy to have somebody stop by and like just a human presence in
yeah.
his home. But then, you
he
know.
He keeps inadvertently hurting the
yeah.
monster.
He's blind. The monster's mute. He's pouring hot soup in his lap. He's trying to feed him and take care of him. And he just keeps like.
They do a toast and he like smashes the monster's mug.
Yeah.
So the monster doesn't have anything to drink. And
yeah.
Then lights his thumb on fire when he thinks he's lighting a cigar.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Oh, man. Yeah. That was surprising. I didn't realize. You had to tell me that was Gene Hackman, actually.
Yeah.
He's pretty covered up with the beard and, you
yeah,
know.
He doesn't look like Gene Hackman.
No,
but,
no.
Yeah,
but,
just the little trivia on that one. He actually volunteered to do this because he wanted to try his hand at comedy.
Ah.
And he was good friends with Gene Wilder.
That's funny. The genes.
Yeah, the genes.
Did they hang out a lot? Because Gene Hackman always plays it straight, you know? Like, he's
yeah.
always such. And Gene Wilder is so all over the place.
Yeah. I know Gene Wilder made my top five. I mean, Gene Hackman, I mean, he's knocking on the door of the top five.
Yeah,
he's up there. He's
pretty
great.
Phenomenal.
All right. Well, one other thing I'll mention is the just the music of this film really supports the film well.
Oh, sure.
Right. That violin is pretty haunting.
It's beautiful. Well, and that's a throwback again to the original. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got that beautiful violin. That's kind of that whole, what is it, music that soothes the savage beast.
Yeah.
That violin draws in Frankenstein's monster and keeps him from going on murderous rampages. You know? Or when he runs away, it draws him back. You know?
Yeah.
And it is a beautiful touch to the movie.
So this is a movie where we did most of our talking in the high fives. We passed out a lot of high fives. And I think it shows. So this cast has three Oscar winners.
Wow.
Gene Hackman, Mel Brooks, Cloris Leachman, and three Oscar nominees, Gene Wilder, Madeline Kahn, and Terry Garr.
Wow.
So great cast. Great writing, awesome idea, you know, when you try to marry these two things together that typically don't go together, but it just works for this film.
Exactly. Out of the box. I think you and I both really appreciate something that's out of the box, that works.
Yeah.
So.
Final summations, yay or nay, what say ye, Kim?
Well, it's clearly a yay for me. I think we've gushed on and on about this movie and the cast and just how much we love each of these actors individually for the most part. So yeah, it's a yay. It's a fun watch. You know, again, you may have to have some conversations about a little bit of it because it doesn't really hold up to 2021 standards of conduct for human beings.
Socially or...
Right, but what movie does that perfectly? I mean, there's not a lot out there, so
sure.
So anyhow, yeah, it's a big old yay. Like, this is a good time.
Yeah, I love it. Yay for me. Just the man. I wish we could have had Terry Garr, Gene Wilder, and Marty Feldman together more.
Yeah.
You know, like outside of this movie, like other movies.
Right. Right.
You know, put them together some more because. I mean, just that whole strangulation scene where he's like, you know, they've all obviously have these sedatives prepared. So if anything goes wrong, give the sedative to the monster.
Right.
And then he doesn't have a chance to tell them the monster's strangling him. And, you know, Terry Garr.
He has to do charades, basically.
They actually play a game of charades for him to tell him to give the monster a sedative.
Yeah.
Just that whole scene is just hilarious.
And another moment where Gene Wilder gets to snap because after, you know, they finally have given the sedative and he looks at Marty Feldman and he's like, sedative? Sedative?
He starts strangling Marty Feldman.
Yeah, he's going to strangle poor Marty Feldman.
And he's like, give him the, what? And so he has to play charades again, all over again with Terry Garr.
All over again.
But then they get interrupted. That just is hilarious. This actually had the most comments from any of our social media of any other film that we've done.
I think this is a well-loved movie.
So I'm going to read through some of our comments from our Instagram. Robert E. 590 says, it was one of the best movies ever made.
Wow.
That's very definitive.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Freeman, 77, said, this movie makes me laugh out loud every time I see it.
Us with too.
Lots of emojis. Film Theorist, which is my buddy Steve, his podcast, they've just started, which I recommend.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to do some sort of partnership with them or something.
Yeah.
But he says, here's a controversial statement. Young Frankenstein is better than Blazing Saddles, and way, way, way better than Spaceballs, which I am not a fan of. Mel Brooks did make some good movies after Young Frankenstein. Silent Movie, History of the World Part 1, and his remake of the Ernst Lubitsch classic, To Be or Not to Be.
Wow.
But he made some not-so-good movies after it, too. Spaceballs, Robin Hood, Men in Tights. 1974's Young Frankenstein was Mel Brooks' peak.
Wow, this guy knows his Mel Brooks.
He does. I have to say, I mean, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, Men in Tights, I did like those movies.
You know that I've never actually seen Robin Hood, Men in Tights?
Oh, you haven't?
Nope. I've seen clips.
It's not great, but it's good for some cheap laughs.
Right, right.
But I don't think it's a hot take to say Young Frankenstein is his best movie.
Wow, yeah, sure.
I mean, it's considered...
From those.
In some of the comedies, like, it's considered a top 10 comedy.
Right.
So that's pretty safe to say, actually, Steve. So Trev9F says, first film we rented on video back in 84.
Oh, fun.
Downhill from there. So funny. And we have some heart emojis from Fred Zoghibby. I don't know. I'm sorry. I killed that name. Pierce Horvath said, it's my favorite film score of all time.
Oh, wow. The film score, huh?
John Morris created a lullaby straight out of the region that Roma even learned today. I've been playing his Transylvania lullaby from 12.
Really? That's fascinating.
That is fascinating. Let's see. A few more comments. We got some repeat comments. Oh, they're lines from the movie. Abby somebody. Abby who? Abby normal? Hump? What hump? It could be worse. It could be raining.
Thunder crash. Cue thunder crash.
That was from The Film Theorist. And Mike Freeman, and this is for the picture we posted of Igor. He says, I ain't got no body, with the music emojis.
Yeah.
And Trev9F says, nobody cares for me, Igor, Frodrick.
Frodrick?
Frodrick. So, yes, it's well-loved by the internet fans, too.
I love it. I love that they went into a little quote fest there. That's hilarious.
So, yes, please go out there, offer suggestions on movies. But not for season one. I have to tell you, we already have the rest of our movies picked for season one. Because remember, we told you we're giving you 20 episodes.
That's right.
And then a bonus episode 21 where we do kind of Oscar-style awards.
That's
for,
right.
Actors.
We still need a catchy name for that.
Yeah, we need some. Well, we have some time.
You know, what do they call them?
The ESPYs.
The ESPYs. That's what ESPN does. But remember on The Office, what did they do? They had something. Yeah. I can't think of what it was called now. Oh, that's
somebody's
shameful.
Somebody's going to send us something.
Yeah. You can shame us. We're okay with that. Publicly shame us. Well, I can't remember what the awards were on The Office.
We could cheat, pause it, look it up,
and edit.
Say it, edit it. But, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to rob you of honesty here.
No. I don't remember what they were called, but I know it was funny. Yeah. Whatever it was.
Scranton, Pennsylvania. What's the name of the company? In The Office.
Oh, Dunder Mifflin. So the it was Dundies. The Dundies. It was the Dundies. Dundies. Yes, we got there. I'm going to blame this on COVID fog. We're both on second shot fog.
Yeah. Now we're coming up on 5 hours for me now. So.
Yeah, how are you feeling?
I feel warm.
You feel warm?
I feel warm.
Uh-oh. He might be on this downhill slide.
So what are we watching next week?
All right, so next week we are going to watch Red Sonja from 1985. It's a PG-13 film, and it's an adventure fantasy that you and I both watched growing up.
Yes.
So we have some history with this film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good old Bridget Nielsen, Arnold Schwarzenegger mashup when he was...
Yeah.
I mean, I guess he's probably still ginormous and buff.
Right.
But he's an old man now.
It's fairly fresh off of his bodybuilding days.
Yeah. So he's, you know...
Jacked.
He's jacked, and he's going to help Red Sonja rescue the, kidnapped priestesses of something.
Yes, there's some sort of storyline in there.
Yeah, there's a storyline, I'm sure.
Lots of sword and sandal action,
yes.
Adventure, a weird romance, but it'll be good.
Yeah, it'll be good. It's going to be fun.
It'll be fun. So it's available on Amazon. I actually purchased this for $4.99 on Amazon.
Oh, okay. So we own it now.
So we own it. So if you like this movie, you've seen it before, there's deals out there on it. And if you haven't seen it before, I mean, if you're going to rent it for $2.99 or buy it for $4.99, I mean, you could do what I did and just go out and get it. So yeah, like I said, we're doing 20 episodes. This will be episode 18. So we are definitely coming down. The countdown is happening.
All right.
So... All right. Well, we'll come at you next week with Red Sonja. Watch it, and we'll talk about it.
All right. Enjoy your movies, guys. Peace out.
Peace out.